Welcome to the Head to Heal podcast, where you'll go head over heels learning about how the body and the brain work together to either feed disease or fight it. I'm your host, Jordana Sade, certified holistic nutritionist and founder of the Mindful Clinic. With a background in nutrition, behavioral neuropsychology, and hypnosis, I'm going to walk you through the root cause of your symptoms and disordered behaviors. The body has an innate ability to heal. No one is destined for illness, and most, if not all, disorders can be reversed. Come with me as we develop a new understanding of how you can use your head to heal and truly thrive. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Head to Heal podcast. I'm your host, Jordana Sade, certified holistic nutritionist, hypnotherapist, and founder of the Mindful Clinic. I want to preface this episode and all future episodes by saying that I am not a medical doctor and you should always seek help from a physician before beginning any new health regime. Okay, guys, I have a lot of new faces on here, so welcome. It's so nice to see you. I've been having a lot of questions in my DMs about food psychology and what exactly food psychology is and why eating behavior is even really important. And so I think it's really time to kind of dive a little bit deeper and really talk about like this concept of food psychology. And so I've had so many questions about eating and eating behavior, and I think really we need to kind of get back to the basics. So some of this might be information that you guys have heard me talk about on social media or even in older episodes, but right now I really just want to take the time, especially for all of the new people, to really dissect and help you guys understand what food psychology is and why it's important and how it can literally change your life and your eating, your relationship to your food, okay? So first of all, there is so much backlash that I personally receive from all the intuitive eaters out there and like the weight loss nutritionists that talk to you about how eating behavior is really not important. And it really just focuses on exactly what you're eating and how much you're eating and when you're eating. And that is like what, you know, society really believes is what we need to focus on. But I'm here to remind you that as long as you just eat when you're hungry and you stop when you're full, you'll literally never have an issue with weight. Now, of course, there can be like physiological manifestations that the body can develop that can prevent your being able to lose weight effectively. So, you know, hormonal imbalances or pathogens, etc. But in order for there to be a physiological representation that would affect the metabolism, there has to be like years and years and years of emotional dysfunction in order to get to that place. And so food psychology, first and foremost, really just focuses on the emotional relationship that we have to food. And essentially, it creates the awareness around the notion that most people actually do know what's healthy and what's not. It's just that they choose the unhealthy option anyways, right? Like we all know an apple is healthier than a chocolate bar, but we still choose the chocolate bar anyways. So if you have a goal of weight loss, why is that? Food psychology is really understanding why we eat and the motivation behind eating behavior instead of obsessing over what we should eat. So the reality is, like, most people want to be thin. Okay, let's just like clear that up, right? We all want to be thin, healthy, lean, etc. But their behaviors are contradicting their goals. And this is really not an issue of willpower or discipline. So I hear this often all the time in my discovery calls. If I just had more willpower, if I could just learn discipline. Like, let me tell you something, sweetheart. You have enough willpower. You have enough discipline. If you've ever tried a diet and you've, you know, restricted calories or restricted certain food groups, like, in order to even get through that diet, even though it wasn't successful, you must have a lot of willpower. You must have a lot of discipline. You're disciplined enough to make it to work on time, even though you don't want to, right? You're disciplined enough to like take care of your kids, even though sometimes it's hard, you still do it anyways. And so it's actually not an issue of willpower or discipline at all. This is a misconfiguration or a brain program of self-sabotage. And food is just one of the easiest saboteurs. Like, it is so easy because it is literally so common and so widely accepted. And so, you know, if you were like in a classroom and you were just doing lines of cocaine, like I think people would have something to say. But because if you're in a classroom and you're opening up like a Twix bar, like nobody's saying anything. Not only is it acceptable in society to charge yourself through food, to prioritize unhealthy foods, to emotionally eat, stress eat, etc., but your brain can also get around it versus like, oh, I'm going to become an addict, right? But it really is the same thing in the sense where at the end of the day, the brain is just using another external force as a coping mechanism. Okay. Obesity rates are over 40% in America. Like, fuck. Like, that is crazy. Can we just let that sit in? Obesity rates are about 42% of all Americans are obese. almost half of Americans are clinically obese, not just a little bit overweight, like clinically obese. Okay. And the main solution here is to just go on a diet. And that just like simply does not work. The dieting industry is a multi-billion dollar industry. And if it worked, we would never need to diet again, right? If it worked, then why are obesity rates rising? Diets have been scientifically proven to have a 98% fail rate. Yikes. I would not take those odds. Yet time and time again, people are so ashamed of their bodies and what they've done. So they just go back on another diet to fall off no less than like 4 months later, right? And instead of blaming the diet, they blame themselves. They think, I don't have enough discipline. I don't have enough willpower. But you guys, the system is broken, okay? This is why this work, this is why food psychology is so important to me. Because as most of you guys know my story, I was a classic yo-yo dieter. And every time I fell off, I would tell myself this story of like, tomorrow will be better. I'll get back on the horse, or there's something wrong with me. Why can't I stick to anything? I just have to get like back in control, right? And so in order to really kind of like dissect why food psychology is important, I've touched on this, but we really need to understand what self-sabotage is. Okay, so to fully understand why you would have a goal of weight loss, but then continue to sabotage your goals, continue to overeat, continue to push snooze in the morning, continue to not prioritize movement, etc., we have to understand self-sabotage. So self-sabotage is really just a coping mechanism that relates back to trauma. So a lot of my clients will talk to me like, well, I haven't really had anything traumatic happen to me. But the reality is like we all have trauma, right? And so trauma is anything that really just dysregulates the brain. So it's anything that like that makes the brain feel like, ah, I didn't like that. So some people have like really big traumas. We call this big T trauma. And that's like, you know, sexual assaults, car crash, parents die, parents incarcerated, etc. And then other people have like small T traumas. So like my trauma when I was like 8 years old was a boy called me fat. Like, so you might look at that and be like, oh yeah, like I was bullied. So that actually is traumatic, because all trauma really is, it's your brain feeling dysregulated. So it feels not good about itself. And because the brain does not like to feel dysregulated, it likes to feel good, it's going to seek pleasure, right? So if you have a childhood, it's usually this is happening in childhood, but it can happen when you're a bit older. But especially if we just kind of stay with childhood. So if you have a childhood where like you just don't feel very good about yourself, you feel anxious all the time. You come home and your parents are like fighting or dysregulated, or, you know, they have high expectations of you. So one of the most common traumas that I see with my clients are they all are like perfectionists. They're all highly, highly critical of themselves. And that's because they had overly critical parents, right? And so whenever the brain just feels a little bit not happy, it's going to seek pleasure. And when you seek that pleasure, like, so whether the behavior to seek that pleasure is like to eat a sweet or search for alcohol or even just like binge watch a show, you create an identity. So the reality is your daily behaviors match your deepest beliefs about yourself, not your goals and your dreams. Right? And so if the belief about yourself is like, ugh, I'm a failure. I shouldn't have done that. Next time I'm not going to eat this sugar. Like, why did I have that chocolate bar? If you're telling yourself this story, then your identity is I'm a failure, and your beliefs, your thoughts are going to be like, ugh, I don't feel good about myself. And your behaviors are going to match the identity, not your goals and your dreams. Right? And so this creates kind of a conflict, because every day if you wake up and you're like, today is going to be the day I'm going to get my shit together, right? Today I'm going to do X, Y, and Z, but you behave in ways that are inconsistent with that, you actually lose trust in yourself, because now you've made a promise that you can't keep. I call this the conflict contract. And actually the most important like reputation that you need to work on is the reputation with yourself. If you can't trust yourself because you keep making promises and not keeping them, who the fuck can you trust? And so a lot of my clients are coming to me and they're like, I just don't have any discipline. I don't trust myself. And I'm like, yeah, because you keep making promises and not following through, right? And so if you can't keep the promise that you're going to make to yourself, don't make it. Work small, right? The other thing is, like, we talk a lot about confidence. Well, if I lost the weight, I'd have confidence. It actually is the other way around. You have to have confidence to lose the weight, right? Because all confidence is your reputation with yourself. How do you feel about yourself, and how you build that up, how you build up your reputation is by making and keeping daily promises to yourself. So if every day you wake up and you're like, I'm going to go to the gym today, and then you don't. Or like, today is going to be the day I'm going to like cook dinner, and then you order in again. Like, you are losing trust within yourself. You're breaking that contract. And then eventually that leads to you feeling out of control, you feeling like you can't trust yourself in even the smallest of situations, right? And this leads to your self-concept. So if your self-concept, like if you, the way that you think about yourself is negative, like, oh, I'll never get that job, I'm not pretty enough, not smart enough, et cetera, then like, of course your behavior, of course your brain's going to want to self-soothe. And then we just call this sabotage, right? It's like, I feel like shit about myself. And so I just ate an entire bag of chips. And like now I feel like even more shit about myself. Well, the problem is not the chips. The problem is not the behavior. The problem is the way that you think about yourself that led to that behavior, right? So this is what food psychology is. It's really understanding the motivation behind behavior, specifically as it relates to your eating behaviors, right? And so we can't like forget about things like cravings or real hunger. And so when I talk to my clients, like if you just eat when you're hungry and you stop when you're full, a lot of them are like, I don't even know when I'm hungry. I don't even know when I'm full, right? I could literally eat anything like at all times. Like I never feel that full signal. Well, the reality is like we are born into this world as very intuitive beings. I have an 8-month-old baby now and like I cannot overfeed that bitch. Like she will not overeat. When she's done, she's done. It doesn't matter what it tastes like. We are born with these processes. The feeling of hunger comes from the autonomic nervous system. The autonomic nervous system is the automatic nervous system. So this is the part of the nervous system that we don't have to think about. So we don't have to think about our heart beating. We don't have to think about digesting. We don't have to think about taking a breath. These things are all just happening. We don't have to think about like the sending the cue to go take a shit. Like we just get that cue when we go. And food and eating comes from that autonomic nervous system. We're born with it. The problem is along the way, as we age, right? People tell us, no, don't eat this, don't eat that. You start to diet and you start to have only 80 grams of protein and only 100 calories of this. And your brain starts to try and take control of an automatic process that should be happening within the body, right? So once the brain tries to control that, of course, you're not listening to true hunger cues. It's like you go on your first diet, and even though I'm hungry, like I've had my calories for the day, so I'm not going to listen to that cue. Well, great. Then your hunger and full signals are going to stop talking to you because you've ignored them for so many years. And so part of the work that I do with my clients is helping them reestablish these true hunger cues. And because at the end of the day, like I said at the very beginning of this podcast, if you only ever eat when you're hungry and stop when you're full, you'll never be overweight. Like being overweight does not come from sugar. It does not come from fat. It does not come from whatever you want to like villainize in this like new fad, whatever. Being overweight comes from overeating. If you are eating more than your body needs, you will store fat. It's very, very simple. And I remember when I was growing up and I would have friends who, you know, they would just eat when they're hungry and stop when they were full. And they were able to eat all these things that like I was never allowed to eat. I was never allowed to have macaroni and cheese. I was never allowed to have like chips at home. Obviously, my mom cooked a lot more food than any of us needed, but I was never allowed to have these things. And they always got them and they were always skinny and it just didn't make sense to me. But the difference is that like we would go and we would play and they would never think about food. Whereas all day long, all I was thinking about was food. And that was because I grew up where my nervous system felt so dysregulated. I truly did not like myself the majority of the time. And so my brain was just subconsciously seeking a way to feel better. We can't villainize that process, right? It's kind of like, thank you, brain. Like, thank you so much for doing your job. Like, it's just trying to like find safety. It's just trying to find the happiness. But the way that it's going about it is actually causing more self-sabotage, right? It's causing more unhappiness in the long run. So I talk about this a lot, but it's kind of like we're sacrificing long-term pleasure for short-term gain. How can I feel good right now versus like what's going to make me feel good in the long run? Hi, angels. I want to take a second away from regular programming to tell you something super exciting. I have put together a very quick survey. And right now, what I'm doing is I'm setting goals and directions and ideas for the rest of 2023. And I really just want to know from you what you guys want from me. So you basically have a chance to actually have a big effect on how my business runs this year and the type of content that I let out and also the research I look into. So I've put together a survey. It literally takes less than 5 minutes and it is going to help me know how to better serve you guys this year. If you're like, I just wish somebody would tell me how to get rid of this stubborn weight, or what time is best to take my protein powder, or how many cups of coffee should I drink, or why can't I stop snacking, or literally whatever you need help with, I can probably help with it as long as it's within the food psychology realm. And I would honestly be so grateful for you to fill this out. I would love to hear from you what you need help with and what you want to see and hear. Also, for everyone who fills out the survey, you guys have a chance to win a free one-on-one call with me and a $250 gift card to use towards any one of my services. The survey link is going to be in the show notes, and it's also on all of my socials. Okay, without any further delay, let's get back to the episode. Thank you so, so much, and I'm so excited to hear from you. I've talked about this before in recent episodes, so I'm not going to like beat the dead horse, but you always want to ask yourself, is this behavior going to make me feel better before or afterwards? And if the behavior is going to make you feel better before, it's likely that you're sacrificing long-term pleasure for short-term gain. For example, pressing the snooze button feels so good before, right? Yes, I do want to press the snooze button. But after, it's like, well, fuck, now I'm late for work. Not so good after. Eating a whole box of donuts. Oh my God, I want the entire box. I want a bite of every flavor. Feels so good before. But after, you're like, fuck, why did I do that? Right? And so you can always just ask yourself, you know, will this behavior make me feel better before or after? And then if it's the behavior is going to make me feel better before, you can start to question, is this worth doing? So when it comes to nervous system dysregulation, like your brain just wants to feel good right now. And if you've had a habit or if you've done before where your brain felt dysregulated and you reached for something to temporarily make it feel better in that moment, it's going to create a neural pathway. It's going to create a program that's like, when I feel dysregulated, I know exactly how to turn that off just for right now. But what we don't think of is the long-term consequences of that, right? Okay, so let's go a little bit deeper, okay? And let's talk about some of the predispositions that people might have in order to have this unhealthy or dysregulated relationship to food, okay? So there is a specific genetic marker that exists. It's called the DRD2 gene, and this is like a genetic mutation specifically on dopamine. So individuals who have this DRD2 gene mutation are more likely to engage in behaviors to obtain dopamine. I've talked about dopamine so many times in the past, but dopamine is incorrectly viewed as the pleasure hormone. Dopamine is actually related to it's the molecule of more. It's related to engaging in more of that behavior. It's related to motivation, right? And so when dopamine is released, instead of being like, yes, I feel good and that's all I need, you're like, oh yeah, give me more of that. When you take a bite of chocolate, you're not like, that was great. That's all I want. You're like, oh yeah, and I'll have another bite, right? So dopamine is a very, very adaptive molecule, neurotransmitter that actually is one of the reasons that we are alive right now, because dopamine is what creates motivation. So if we go back to primitive times, like we needed to be motivated to get up and hunt and gather, right? We needed to be motivated to have sex so that we can reproduce, right? So dopamine is related to motivation. Individuals who have a mutation on the dopamine receptor, so the DRT2 gene, basically are going to want to engage in behaviors that are going to release a lot of dopamine. So in the body, we can only release a certain amount of dopamine. When we release dopamine, we feel this desire to engage in more of that behavior. So we feel temporary pleasure, and then simultaneously we feel pain or craving. Now, it's within that pain or craving that we reach for more. We take that next bite. So people that have a mutation on this gene are often seeking substances or behaviors that are going to release a shit ton of dopamine versus like just feeling kind of satiated on their own. Okay, so there is the predisposition of the genetic marker. Also, we talked about this sort of with the dysregulation, but if we want to talk about this from a neuroscience perspective, essentially what's happening when the brain feels dysregulated is the amygdala. So the amygdala is this like olive-sized part of the brain. It's a very primitive part of the brain. The amygdala regulates our fight and flight response. So when the amygdala fires, when there's a perception of danger, when somebody tells us they don't like us, when that kid called me fat when I was 8 years old, when you're like driving in traffic and you're about to be late for work, the amygdala is going to fire, okay? And the amygdala is like, we're in danger, fight or flight, something's wrong. And it's going to shut down the prefrontal cortex. Now, the prefrontal cortex is where we have all of our impulse control. This is where we have all of our executive functioning, our critical thinking. The prefrontal cortex is like what makes us like human beings, right? But if we have the amygdala firing and it shuts down the prefrontal cortex, it's going to be very hard to engage in impulse control. And so when the amygdala is firing, the brain's like, I don't feel good. And now we have a coping mechanism where we've developed a program where it's like, well, if I just eat the sugar, I'll feel temporarily better, right? We're not going to be able to control the impulse of going to get that sugar. And this is like because the brain is wired this way. And so when we're in that fight or flight, that stressful response, the opposite of fight or flight is rest and digest. So when you're physically chewing, you're literally telling the brain, hey, I'm safe. I'm going to live another day. And so not only is this like related to the self-sabotage patterns, but if we look back, like even just biologically, the way that our brain is wired, we are wired to seek pleasure. We are wired to turn off that stress response. And the problem is like we're no longer running away from a bear type of danger. Like we are experiencing this stress response over and over and over again all day long. And so of course your brain is going to develop a coping mechanism, right? When we eat something sweet, it also biologically tells our brain that like we're going to live another day. Because if we go back to primitive times when we'd be hunter and gathering, if we come across something sweet, it was usually safe. And if we came across something bitter, it was usually poisonous, right? So our brains are literally wired for that sweet taste. And so if the brain is in a state of dysregulation, if the amygdala is firing, you're like, I'm going to be late for work. I don't know what to wear. I feel like shit about myself. Then you have something sweet. It's like, oh, I feel temporarily better. And also I'm going to live another day. And the brain feels like we're not in danger anymore, temporarily. And then because of this, we can become further and further disconnected from our true hunger cues, because then we're no longer eating just to satisfy survival. We're eating as a coping mechanism. We're eating to turn off the dysregulation in the brain. So this is a lot of the work that I do with my clients, right? Like my job is to literally reteach the brain how to stop using food as a coping mechanism and teach it to regulate on its own so that we're no longer emotionally eating, binge eating, stress eating, and so that we are actually responding to our true hunger cues. Because I used to hate it when I would like see these intuitive eaters and they're like, well, what do you feel like eating? Like intuitively, what do you want? And at that point in my life, I would be like an entire box of donuts. Like that is truly what I want. But the brain will seek self-sabotage just to temporarily regulate itself, whereas the body actually has this intuitive process where the body's never going to seek something that's going to harm it, right? And so when we can turn off that mechanism in the brain where we're no longer eating just to like to make ourselves feel a certain way, when we're no longer eating because like we want to escape boredom, when we're no longer eating because we want to procrastinate, when we're no longer eating because we feel like so stressed and happy, etc., or because we're trying to like match our behaviors to our identity, I'm fat, I'll always be this way, I'm a failure, whatever, then we can actually tune into the body and we can let the body take control. And so sometimes what this looks like is like sometimes it looks like me eating like really healthy all day. And sometimes it looks like me having like wanting some chocolate. And I listen to those cravings now, right? Like I'm not like, oh, I can't have the chocolate. I'm like, okay, I hear you. You want some chocolate? Great. Let's have a piece of dark chocolate and see how you feel. I actually just like refuse to live in a world without cake. And like I said, sugar's not the problem. The overconsumption of sugar, of course, is the problem. But we also cannot ignore that some foods are just more highly palatable than others. So like a lot of these processed foods are designed to be addictive. They're releasing a lot more dopamine, right? And so when we can train the palate, when we can literally train the taste buds not to favor those types of foods, then we can be okay with having meals that like aren't for pleasure anymore. It's like this meal is like just for survival and that's fine. I'm a huge foodie. Like me and my husband love going out to eat. Like we just went out to eat for Valentine's Day and it was delicious. But is every day Christmas Eve? Is every day a Valentine's Day meal? Absolutely not. And it like I don't feel like I need that anymore either. But that's because like my nervous system is so regulated at this point that like it's not constantly searching for a coping mechanism. And that's really like where I want to see you guys at. Okay. So there's so much more that we can dive into with this, but I just want to give you like little short snippets at a time, not to overwhelm you guys. If you have any questions, let me know. As most of you guys know, we are en route for our March launch for the Mindful Method. This is my 12-week program to food and weight freedom. This is the first time that I've really done it at this capacity, and I'm just so excited. I have like more than 50% is full. I can't wait to work with you guys. And it's a 12-week program, but I'm monitoring you over 6 months. So this is really where I get to like put in the physiological practices that I need to rebalance your body while I'm also working on the food psychology and training your brain not to self-sabotage, training your brain to be okay with one bite of chocolate and not needing more. And it's a lot of fun. So if you haven't already, fill out an application. There should be an application in the show notes here. I love you guys. And we're going to talk in a future episode, probably next week, about now that we've talked about the food psychology aspect and the motivation behind eating behavior. I want to actually talk to you about like nutrition psychology. So the specific nutrients that help our brain to function properly and like where that can go wrong. Okay. I love you guys. Have a great day. Bye.